Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. Here to talk UFC 260, where we will crown the baddest man on the planet. The UFC world heavyweight title on the line. The reigning, defending, often sometimes forgotten, undisputed champion of the world, Stipe Miocic, is the underdog again as he defends his crown against the Nigerian nightmare, Frankie Murder, Francis Ngannou. Welcome, everyone, to the show. I am your host, the Daily Fantasy Sniper. With me, as always, the co-host, the analyst, the really important guys of this podcast, it is Chris Olsen. You can find him on Twitter at RealChrisOlsen. Also, Joe, who better known goes by Sun Tzu, also aka Rampage Jackson's new best friend. You should follow him on Twitter to go get that reference. As we're going to leave it at that. Guys, are you ready to crown the baddest man on the planet?
Sure. I am ready to watch the only fight of consequence on this card, which I think is pretty special. You know, there are some interesting fights, particularly DFS-related fights. But as far as any fights that have, you know, weight in the division now or in the larger organization, I think that's the only one. And what a fight for it. We'll get to it, I'm sure, but you know, you're just going to be tension-filled for as long as it's on the feet, and I'm ready for it. I mean, I think personally there's only one way to pick it, but it's going to be interesting nonetheless. But, yeah, I'm ready to go.
Joe, coming off a big week. How you doing, buddy?
Wow, that was a long preamble. Yeah, I think there is look, yes, we lost the co-main event. We lost the title fight. We had some prelims, some issues with the prelims. We got a 10-fight card. Let's keep our fingers crossed. Keep it at 10 fights. There's some interesting spots on this card. I mean, I think there's enough variance to make it playable on DraftKings. So let's get forward and crown then new.
Really?
I have an interesting take on that one. There's an interesting DFS take to that fight, but we'll save that for the co-main event. Before we dig into these fights, make sure you go to rotowire.com/free for a 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. Make sure you like this video. Comment if you're watching on YouTube. Subscribe on YouTube to the RotoWire YouTube channel or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, RotoWire MMA. It's fight time. First fight up, Marc-Andre Barrio, 8,200, taking on Abu Azatar, at 8,000. The line on this fight, Barrio is the favorite at -125. Comeback on Azatar is +105. This fight, you know, we say fighters are boom or bust. I feel this whole fight is boom or bust. Joe, we'll start you with you this week. Who you got?
Barrio has been a major disappointment since getting to the UFC. Three L's and then a win, which got overturned due to popping USADA. And then we've got Ozatar, who's the brother of the potato handler. And he hasn't fought in a number of years, I guess four, at which he beat Vito Miranda, who was on his way out of the UFC. So what do you do here? I guess, you know, do you go with the fighter who hasn't fought, hoping that he's maybe made some improvements? Or do you go with the guy that only looked good on PEDs? I'm going to lean towards the cheaper fighter here, which is Azatar. It's not a strong endorsement, but I'm going to lean in that direction and I guess keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah, for me, this fight is both these guys are aggressive, swing wild hooks, and one could knock out the other quickly. And if they don't, so both guys are alive to, honestly, the 60-second bonus. But if we don't get a first-round knockout, I think we're going to see three disgusting rounds of the winner scores. Total crap. I lean towards Azatar just because I think he's more likely to get that knockout. So we think he's the better DK play. But again, not a strong take. I'll mix in this fight. Chris, how about for you?
Yeah, I'm a little stronger on Barrio. Stronger than you guys are on Azatar. I think that what we saw in Azatar in that Miranda fight didn't really impress me all that much. I mean, it's good that he goes to the body, but he's way more wild and not quite as fast as his brother. So I think, like, you see those big looping punches, and we'll talk about big looping punches later too, and you might go, wow, he throws really hard. Why aren't these shots having more effect? And I think it's because, you know, you can see the shots coming. I mean, it reminds me of, our favorite light heavyweight, Kadys Ibragimov, who just recently got cut. I mean, throws really hard and it looks good, but they're so big and loopy that, you know, you can see them, and the shots you don't see coming are the ones that hurt you. So the reason I think Barrio plays a little better here is he can make fights kind of grueling and sap cardio and use his wrestling. We saw him get into a lot of clinches with Christoph Jacko. And Vito Miranda grounded Azatar twice, mounted him twice. Azatar did his best Derek Lewis impression and just was able to kind of bump out of there. Barrio is big and physical, and I think more physicality than Vitor Miranda. So I like him to hold positions if he can get them. I think takedowns and control time could be a big part of this fight. If not to outright score, then using those controls to somebody's phone is going off. Unprofessional, folks. But I think that he could at least use it to tire Azatar out, who's going to be throwing the big shots anyway. I think Barrio has a chance to score pretty well here. He's got the big uppercuts he can use. I think he's the more accurate striker, the more well put together striker as far as form, and I just like him a little more here. Either one can get a knockout, as you said, Sean. But I think if you want to talk who's going to be the more consistent scorer here and who can put up a big score, I think it could be Barrio. So that's where I'm going.
All right, next fight up, we have Omar Morales at 8,700 taking on Shane Young at 7,500. The line on this fight, Morales is -190, Shane Young +175. This fight is the fight that was on, and then it was off, and now it's back on again. And please let this stay on just because we need another fight. Not because I think this fight is really good for DraftKings. For me, Shane Young is a live underdog, but I'm still taking Omar Morales to win a striking-based decision that I don't think this is going to be a great fight. That's why I went first in this one, because I'm pretty much done with my breakdown for it. Chris, dig in a little further.
Yeah, I actually like a lot of what Shane Young does in the cage. He's got a high-pressure boxing style, goes to the body a lot. He can mix in some takedowns too. which we saw in one of his fights. I forget which now, but rest assured he did use, I think it was, it came to me and then I lost it. That's okay. Anyway, he can use wrestling, but generally likes that high pressure boxing style. Problem is that his hands are generally very low, and that caused the head kick. Well, it was a head kick and then an uppercut to follow, because when he exited from the clinch, he had his hands down and got caught. Morales punches and kicks very hard, especially on the counter. And Shane Young's style is kind of built to kind of do that touch and then power shot kind of thing. So he's not going to be throwing with power all the time in the same way Morales is. I think Morales can catch him. This is a weird fight for me, because I totally acknowledge that a likely scenario here is Shane Young getting knocked out, but I'm still going to pick him just because I like his style a little bit better. And I think that he has a chance to be the better DraftKings score, especially at his price, if he can get his game going, as opposed to Morales, who's just going to throw some heavy power shots. Shane Young really has to do what he didn't do in the Ludwig Klein fight, which is really crowd Morales here. If he doesn't, he's going to eat another head kick, and that's going to be the end of it. But I'm going to pick Young to get his game going and rack up some points maybe on DK.
Joe. Okay, so I'll be quick here. I like a lot of what Shane Young has done as well, in particular the way he got laid out by Ludwig Klein. I think that Morales is the pick here, but also in terms of DraftKings, you are not going to make optimal with a decision in this fight. You need Morales to get the knockout. So if you do play Morales, you are in effect looking for the finish, which can certainly happen. I mean, we've seen, an epic knockout by, the courtesy of Ludwig Klein on Shane Young. I don't know if Morales hits quite that hard, but the pick is Morales here. Cautionary play for DraftKings. I think a pretty solid bet, though. I definitely like him as a bet, but DraftKings, you're playing the knockout.
All right, next fight up, we're going to talk Mikhail Oleksiejczyk at 8,500, taking on Modestus Bukauskas.
Yeah, Bukaki. Please, watch your
Bukauskas. Also, I wish his nickname would be Bukaki. Just lean into it. Anyway. Plus, then you got to hear Bruce Buffer say that shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, Oleksiejczyk -165, Bukauskas +155. To me, this is power against speed. Joe, who you got?
Yeah, it's interesting because I did a pod earlier this week with MMA Kelton, and Kelton had a debate with BroPix came on, and Kelton debated them. They each had like 3-unit plays on opposite sides of this fight, and I don't know if I did a very good job of breaking the tie. I think I'm going to go with the poll here, and not for obvious reasons.
Of course you would.
Yeah, I do think he's got a speed advantage. This could be a really ugly fight. I mean, Bukauskas, definitely knows how to use a razor. The guy's as clean shaven as any fighter I've seen. But aside from that, I just don't know that he's very good. I mean, he's coached by his dad. It was an interesting, that Michalidis fight was really interesting. I don't think I've ever seen anyone fall through a cage door when it opened up, but that was real interesting. And he got the win there. So I'm going to go with Michalidis. I think he's a better – not Michalidis. I'm going to go with the Paul Mikal. I think he's better – has faced better competition, is a better overall fighter, and has a speed advantage.
Chris, how about for you?
Yeah, I am – I'm gonna go with Lord Mikal, as I'll call him, this week. Oop, wrong button.
Ryan Barton.
I think I like a lot of what he's done too. I think he's got speed, but power as well. And I think a lot of that is generated through the body shots. He, of course, landed the big body shot on what used to be light heavyweight, now heavyweight, John Volante. And also landed a big body shot and a lot of good strikes on Ovince St. Preux before St. Preux took him down and subbed him. Jimmy Crude also took him down and subbed him. Bukauskas is not a dedicated wrestler. I mean, if I've seen him shoot once or twice, I think that's a lot. He certainly didn't do it in Cage Warriors, where most of his career was basically people trying to take him down and then him getting back up and finishing them. I mean, he's a 1-2 leg kick, rangy fighter, uses it pretty well, but also can throw those naked leg kicks, and that's why he was getting caught over and over again by Jimmy Crute. I second Joe. I just don't think he's that good. I think Macau is pretty good. I think that even in the fights he's lost, he's looked pretty good. Jimmy Crute had to shoot for his life over and over again to make sure that he wasn't involved in that storm. And I just don't think Bukauskas is going to be nearly as committed to the wrestling, and I don't think he's as deep of a striker at all. So my pick is Olin Zajac, and I like him quite a bit here, actually.
Yeah, I'm on Oleg Zajac as well. I think he's got multiple paths to victory. I think he could get a takedown. He could get takedowns in this one if he wants them. Smaller guy, but I think speed advantage will be big. I don't think Bukauskas is good enough at using his range. He's kind of KO or bust. So give me Mikhail. I think his price, he doesn't actually need a finish. I think he'll have enough. If he wins, I think he'll have enough volume to score decent. But I think he's got ceiling potential as well. As I'm kind of with Joe, I'm not sold in how good Bukauskas is. The Michalides fight was winning that fight until the end when he got clipped. So give me Lord Mikhail. I can't say your name. Oleg Zajac, I can say better. Next fight up, Abubakar Nurmagomedov taking on Jared Gooden. Nurmagomedov 9,000. Gooden is 7,200. Line on this fight, Nurmagomedov -240. Gooden is +200. Probably the weakest of the Nurmagomedovs. Going to look to grapple. Gooden will be the better striker, so it's pretty classic striker versus grappler. I think who's up first for this one? Help me out, Chris. I think you're up first.
Yeah, why not? I like Gooden quite a bit here. I don't understand why Abubakar would be quite as big a favorite as this. I think
have you seen Gooden stop a takedown?
Well, I mean, I haven't really seen Abubakar, go for takedowns over and over again in the style of say a Khabib. He's very comfortable on his feet. Now, of course, he did go right for a takedown in the Zawada fight. I mean,
we just saw he got subbed, but yeah, we saw it.
He got subbed, and that's a theme for him. He also got subbed by in another fight in LFA. In fact, he's 1-2-1 in his last four, which is another curious reason for a big favorite here. I just don't think he's comfortable in dealing with submission attempts. In his fight with Jonathan Weston in LFA, he had to give up a position fighting off of Kimura. And, the fight, his last loss by sub, not Zawada, but the one in LFA, was a club and sub where he ducked into an uppercut first. So I think he uses trunk movement a little bit too much. I think he relies on it too much. And Gooden is a guy whose game I like a lot on the feet. He kind of reminds me of old Justin Gaethje, where he's just going to walk you down and keep coming and hope that you break. I do think that because Abubakar is really good at reactive takedowns, so I think that with Gooden constantly waiting in, that's a concern. But again, Gooden has 6 subs on his record. He's not lost on the ground. He's got some guillotines in there. So it would be interesting to see what happens if this fight does hit the ground. I am not going to bank on just constant takedowns from Abubakar. I think that Gooden takes this, and I think he can maybe knock him out too.
So Colin for the upset. I have Nurmagomedov. I think he'll get the takedowns. I do think if he doesn't get them, Gooden is the much better striker and will probably piece him up standing up. And was live to a finish. He has to get the takedowns. I think he will, but I don't hate Gooden as a dog play, especially in GPPs. So, but I am on the favorite. So Joe, break the tie.
Yeah. So didn't he need some help making weight today? I know he cuts a lot.
2 tries. Yes.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to pick Nurmagomedov, and not because he's going to have Khabib in his corner. I do think he'll be able to get Gooden down and control him. obviously it was an embarrassment, the last fight. I mean, he was dominating it. And then of David Sawada, got subbed by David Sawada of all people. I do believe, though, that Night Train, I'm kind of coming around on the Night Train as a live dog, though. And I think, you know, we should all have some shares of him in DraftKings. But I'm going to go out and pick Nurmagomedov.
All right, next fight up, we're going to talk about Alonzo Menafield, 8,100. He was scheduled to fight William Knight, and that's when he was priced. Knight pulls out. Fabio Chiarot is the replacement. He is 7,000. So Alonzo Menafield, 8,100, is minus 300 in this fight. Comeback on Chiarot is plus 270. I'm going to keep my mouth shut to start this one. Joe, start us off.
Yeah, this is pretty easy. I mean, all the line value is on Menafield. He's going to be the highest owned fighter on DraftKings. Minus 290. He's got the largest inside the distance prop, you know, on the slate, 8.1K. He's going to be really highly owned. That does not mean he doesn't come without some level of risk. You know, I was listening to, you know, Pete the Heat Rogers over at the competitor, and he knows this fighter. He's trained with him. You know, said he's been working on his striking. He's, you know, it's funny because he's got some submissions, but he's not a super good wrestler. If you watch some film on him, and again, he had, you know, he's taking this fight on 3 days' notice, trains in Boston, Camp Lozon.
Missed weight by a half pound.
Yeah, I missed weight by a half pound, but I'm still going to need to go with Menafield here. I think, you know, he's got the edge in class. I think he's had some embarrassing fights himself recently that hopefully his camp has straightened him out on. And this is really a good spot for him. I mean, you know, he's fighting a short notice guy. I actually was the other way when he was fighting Knight. I like Knight quite a bit, actually. But in this fight, I think, you know, I think he will have the edge and all the metrics in terms of odds value and, you know, inside the distance go to Menafield. So I'm going to pick Menafield.
Chris?
So that's interesting because now I kind of want that fight because I didn't like Knight at all. I thought Menafield was going to run him over. But as far as this fight,
I don't know how you can think Menafield's going to run over anybody.
Well, what do you mean? That's the only way he wins. How else does he win? I mean, so far, I mean, granted, he's fought guys.
I know, but to project he's just going to run over people is – go ahead. I'm going last in this fight. I'm going to go last.
All right. I mean, we can have a sidebar conversation on William Knight, but I think that you know, as far as this fight goes, Chiarot is sort of he'll do different things depending on his opponent. I've seen him sort of fight with his back to the cage. I think in his most recent two fights, if I'm not mistaken, a la Tyron Woodley, who we'll talk about later, I've seen him go for takedowns. To Joe's point, he just sort of got he sort of wrapped up the next standing and got a sub in one of his fights. So he's capable of doing a lot of different things. I think in this fight, Menafield, he will cede the pressure to Menafield, who always comes forward. And I think Menafield is just going to be too push a pace that he can't really handle. Now, obviously, Menafield got really tired in that fight against Devin Clark. But he was still fighting. He was dead tired, but he was still landing some good shots into rounds two and three. So I don't think we have to worry that it's a situation where, like, okay, he's got a round of cardio and then he's going to stop fighting. I think even if this fight extends, he's going to be live for it. I just think Chiarot is going to give Menafield the fight he wants. And I think even if Chiarot does go for takedowns, it's not as though Menafield is an easy takedown. Devin Clark had to work very hard, and I doubt his wrestling is quite as good, Chiarot's that is, as Devin Clark. So, yeah, I think a little recent history might push people to say, well, you know, Menafield's not very good, but he's still a terrifying force in the cage, at least for a few minutes, and I think that's pretty much all he's going to need here. So a pick is Menafield.
Yeah, let's talk about why Alonzo Menafield is minus 300 and how that is terrifying. His UFC wins are Paul Craig and Vinicius Moreira. Ooh, I'm so scared. And then he beat Daniel Jolly and Deshaun Boatwright on the Contender Series. Again, just a murderer's row.
Look, well, Craig, you're talking about the only guy to beat Magomed Ankalaev, by the way.
Oh God, that's a whole other thing. All right, I'm not saying Fabio Chiron is great, but he is a legit prospect. He is now the LFA 205-pound champion. Yes, he was on the Contender Series and he was knocked out by Alexa Kamer. Again, that was his fifth pro fight. He was 24, and I rewatched that fight, and he had Kamer hurt. And as he goes to close the distance, he gets a little reckless, and Kamer hits a flying knee, which was pretty nice. It's not that, look, I'm not saying don't play Menafield. I'm saying Menafield as the chalk on DK at 60% ownership on a 10-fight card is horrendously scary, especially if he doesn't get the quick knockout. Like, he may not hit the optimal 8,100. He has to get the finish in the first round. I think Chiron is live. I've seen Chiron shoot takedowns. I've seen him. He's a decent counter striker. I don't know what style he's going to come out with, especially with the missed weight and short notice. If he decides I need to go get a knockout and stand and trade, then it's probably Menafield's fight. My approach to this, I think Fabio Chiron is a very live underdog. And you got Alonzo Menafield, who's going to be the uber chalk. I can be overweight on both guys, and that's the approach I like here. I'm taking Fabio Chiron to win because I think he's a little more well-rounded than Alonzo Menafield, who everybody's going to be on. Minus 300 on Alonzo Menafield, I'll never play him at that price. Just no thanks. So in DFS, I'm still playing Alonzo Menafield, but I'll be overweight too because I don't want it to totally burn me. I can't have that happen. But I'll be overweight to Fabio Chiron, and he will be my pick to win. He's going to be let 10% own, best case scenario. So doesn't take a lot to get leverage. Next fight up, we're going to talk Kama Worthy at 8,600, taking on Jamie Malarkey at 7,600. Worthy is the favorite for now. I think this fight may flip by the time fight day gets here. Right now, Worthy is minus 120. Malarkey is plus 110. Malarkey will be the most popular underdog on the card. And I'm picking him to win as well. But for the fight breakdown, we will start with Chris for this
one. I think it's me, yeah. And I am ecstatic to hear you say that. You guys often have your fingers on the pulse of things like where the ownership is going to be at a better clip than I do. And so I'm glad at that because I like Kama Worthy a little bit here. I think this is – we don't talk about FanDuel too much, but, I mean, if you look at you look at Jamie Malarkey, he shot something like, I mean, I have it in my article, but it's something like 34 times in his two fights. So, I mean, if he stuffs even half of those, which is way more than he's gotten before, I think he's at about 30%, then Kama Worthy is going to get pile up the points on those takedowns defensed. But as far as the breakdown itself, I just think that, look, the first thing that I should say is that Kama Worthy doesn't have great takedown defense either. But I think that number one is that I think Kama Worthy is going to be the stronger guy, the more physical guy, so that should help him. Second thing is that we have seen Jamie Malarkey get out scrambled in fights before, in the Brad Riddell fight certainly. And we've seen that Kama Worthy is pretty good off his back. He survived the fight against Luis Pena until he found that choke. On the feet, Jamie Malarkey offers almost nothing. He paws with a jab and he throws a low kick and he gets hit very, very hard. If Kama Worthy hits him in the same way that Brad Riddell did, I think he's going to go to sleep. Kama Worthy is a hair trigger counter striker. And I think that, Jamie Malarkey can throw something like a lazy jab out there and just get absolutely blasted. In fact, I'm counting on it. I think that maybe he won't stuff all of them, but I think he'll be able to get back to his feet and stuff enough takedowns where the knockout is going to present itself and it's going to materialize. So I'm taking Kama Worthy.
By the way, Brad Riddell hits fucking hard.
He hits hard, but he's not
like Kama Worthy's got power, but like where he caught Devontae Smith, not saying he doesn't have power, but I wouldn't. Riddell could knock out Malarkey. I'm not so quick to think Kama Worthy can do it.
What I will say too is that the third round, all intents and purposes, that fight should have been stopped then. So I mean, that was a stoppage win for Riddell. I think we can agree on that. But it's a matter of debate. Put it in chat. That could be a fun thing. But I think that Kama Worthy is the harder hitter of the two.
You guys in chat, who hit harder, Brad Riddell or Kama Worthy? I like Malarkey. I think he'll get enough takedowns. I think Worthy's a little bit hypey in terms of just the knockouts kind of drive up lines. I think the smart money's coming to Malarkey. I think the line should have been flipped. And then I'd be more interested in Kama Worthy, but at this price tag, I think Malarkey makes for the much more interesting DK play, and Worthy just some shots in GPP. Joe, how do you
think? I think you're talking some Malarkey.
Nice. Joe? So I think actually Malarkey will be the second most popular favorite. Second most popular dog on DK after Jillian Robinson. But I'm going to lean Malarkey here too. I mean, you know, that last fight by Karma was not a great fight. Malarkey has a solid floor. Riddell does hit hard, beat the living crap out of him. I don't think either one of these guys are long for the UFC. I think Karma Worthy had his moment in the sun. I think Malarkey is probably average to the middle of the road, lunch pail type fighter. I think this is a decent spot for him. Look, Karma has shown he's got some jiu-jitsu. You just don't know how Karma is going to win or what kind of fight he's going to fight. It's not a super ringing endorsement, but I do, you know, I do lean Malarkey here, and I will take the dog.
Well, we got two votes, and I think the voting is closed. That settles it. 2-0, Worthy hits harder. Okay, let's move on.
Oh, boy. Miranda Maverick, 8,800, taking on Jillian Robertson at 7,400. Line on this fight, Maverick is -157. The comeback on Robertson is +147. Both these gals want to grapple, or Maverick really wants to wrestle. She'll be the better wrestler. Robertson, the better grappler. Neither one's a very good striker, but I would give the edge to Maverick, especially in terms of power. She's going to be the stronger fighter. I think Robertson can get a sweep from the bottom. And I'm picking Robertson because for that reason, I think she could end up on top. But the more I look at this, the more I'm starting to get a little antsy because, you know, I've always picked Jillian Robertson. She's one of my, she's for whatever reason, just somebody I like to watch fight. I like the style. So I got sirens behind me. Don't know if you can hear that. Yep. And the more I look at it, Miranda Maverick, though, the strength and the wrestling, the top control wrestling, I'm getting more and more concerned. And I like her a little bit on DraftKings. Like Joe said, I think most people are going to be in Robertson. I don't think Maverick's going to be very high owned. And we've seen what control time can do. And we've seen how little Jillian Robertson likes to be hit. So I'm going to pick Jillian Robertson, but I'm coming around to more shares of Miranda Maverick. This fight is, oh, good. The Chick Whisperer. Joe, what you got?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I like Miranda Maverick a lot. However, I would need to see some big advancements in takedown defense versus, say, her fight against Pearl Gonzalez and Invicta. You know, Gonzalez was able to take her down with relative ease. If I was Miranda, what I would do here is I would try to fight at range. I would not look to take down Jillian myself because Jillian is not a wrestler, so she doesn't go for single legs or double legs. She goes for trips and throws up against the cage in the clinch. I do think Maverick will have a strength advantage here. There's definitely a path to victory for both fighters. I am going to take a slight lean to the underdog here in Jillian Robertson.
Chris, who you got?
So I think I think we're all in agreement. I think if you acknowledge that there's a strength advantage, I think that points pretty strongly to Maverick because we've already seen what somebody can do to Jillian Robertson when they have a strength advantage. And Talia Santos, who basically got her down and held her there for the better part of 15 minutes. I think it's not just the strength, but the jiu-jitsu also and the scrambling ability on the ground. We know Robertson has that. So, I mean, I agree there is a strength advantage, and I think that I think the women who have taken Maverick down, like Pearl Gonzalez and Deanna Bennett, I think they're more physically strong than Robertson as well. So Maverick avenging that loss to Deanna Bennett, by the way, where she didn't get her down in that fight, which I thought was encouraging. But that's pretty much the crux of it for me. And if they do stand, which I don't think they will, I think that Maverick has a pretty concerted advantage there. But I think I think Robertson might be the initial one to go for takedowns, but I think that could backfire on her pretty quickly. And I do think Maverick's best path, or maybe that's wishful thinking, maybe because it's the most profitable DK path, but I do think that she'll be able to control her on the ground if the fight gets there. So my pick is Maverick.
All right. Next fight up. Sean O'Malley, 9,200, taking on Thomas Almeida at 7,000. Line on this fight, O'Malley's -305. Almeida's +275. Really interesting fight here because O'Malley, I think, is longer. I think he's the better striker at this point. He's just fragile. You hit him with a leg kick and the dude crumbles. And I know Almeida knows it. He's not a dumb fighter. He may be old. Fight old, I should say. He's only 29, but Almeida's fight old at this point. Let's be honest. You would think technically O'Malley can win, can get a finish of Almeida, but he's also more likely to win a decision. I don't trust Sean O'Malley. The good thing is that the pricing isn't tight on this card. You can pretty much play whoever you want, especially with Menafield in the middle. I'll have some shares, but I'm really worried about this fight on both sides. I think this is a terrible, terrible cash card for the reason we'll talk about Vicente Luque later. We'll talk about Sean O'Malley. The pay-up options make me squirmy. I'm going to take Sean O'Malley, but I'm real worried. And look, Thomas Almeida is alive to a first round leg kick knockout 100%. So I plan on being overweight to Almeida, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do with Sean O'Malley yet. I'm going to see how builds go. Quite honestly, I think if I can put him in and leaving money on the table still, I'll do it, but I'm not making a $50,000 square lineup with Sean O'Malley in it. It just doesn't seem right. Unless my optimizer spits it in there. But if I'm hand building, I'm not doing it for sure. Chris, who do you got?
Yeah, I think you hit on the concern for Sean O'Malley, which is just the fragility. I mean,
I forgot one other thing. He's mentally out of his goddamn mind.
Yeah,
that has to be said in any introduction for Sean O'Malley forever.
Well, he's a jerk face for sure. I would like
him. Take my undefeated record. You're
yeah. Dumbass. I would like him to lose. I don't think it's going to happen, but I will say that the fragility is a question, not just the Chito Vera fight, but you go back and watch that Sukumtau fight. It's not like that kick hit Sukumtau in the elbow. It hit him sort of up on the forearm hand area, and it still shattered his shin or whatever it did to it. So maybe he's just fragile. Maybe he needs to drink more milk. I don't know what the answer is, but... in any event, that is concerning, especially with like one of the areas where I think Sean O'Malley's gotten a lot better is I think if you go back really early in his UFC career, like Terry and Ware had a lot of success. I think it was in that second round of that fight just by pressuring O'Malley backward. And I think he's rectified that a little bit just by really always staying on the balls of his feet and moving around a lot, having a lot of lateral movement. Early, he was much more willing to just sort of plant and throw, and now he's constantly moving, which I think is good for him. But it also, I mean, how's he going to move around? Maybe he takes another bad step, and who knows? I mean, so that's got to be in the back of your mind somewhere. But as far as the breakdown of the fight, I mean, O'Malley just got crushed coming, trying to wait his way inside on Jonathan Martinez. He's going to have a way more ground to cover trying to come in for Sean O'Malley here. I think he's just going to get lit on fire on the way in. I think he's going to get knocked out in this fight. I would like it. I would like to be wrong, but I think the style is bad here. I think Thomas Almeida coming back on the long layoff looked pretty bad against Martinez, and I can't trust him here, especially against the more rangy fighter. So I'm going Sean O'Malley.
Joe, who you got?
I have O'Malley by finish. I think O'Malley's more live to a first round finish than Almeida. Look, I think Almeida's game is to avoid punishment, or I should say path to victory, not game, is to avoid punishment and work the leg kicks. So I see Almeida his path to victory is more wearing Sean O'Malley down than actually getting a quick KO. And that's his path to victory. However, to Sean's point, to Chris's point, smaller octagon. I like O'Malley bum rushing Almeida and getting the quick finish. You know, Almeida has really deteriorated since, you know, look at his record in hindsight. His opponents are not all that good. He's lost pretty much every step up opportunity he's taken. So give me Sean O'Malley here to get the early finish.
I want to address what Tajik said. Uncle Chael is also undefeated, and Uncle Chael is one of my favorite fighters, but Uncle Chael is clearly shtick. Like, I think O'Malley's he's not right.
Yeah, no, he's not kidding. He thinks
something is not right. So anyway, next fight up. Co-main event time, Vicente Luque, 9,100, taking on Tyron Woodley at 7,100. Luque is the favorite, minus 230. Comeback on Tyron is plus 210. The former welterweight champion, the now rapper, Tyron Woodley, stepped down in competition. Vicente Luque can be hit, but not a lot of activity, not a lot of wrestling. It's hard to judge Tyron Woodley and what he is. I'm going to take Luque here, but it's an interesting one in terms of DK. I don't have a strong read of how this fight's going to go. I actually think it's more likely Luque wins decision or a late finish, and this fight's not going to score great because that's just what Tyron Woodley does. So, I mean, I'm picking Luque, but I actually don't, this is the first Luque fight in a while I don't love for DK. Joe, who you got?
Yeah, so I have Luque as well. I mean, look, I don't know how shot Tyron Woodley is. Yes, this is a step down competition off of Colby Covington, Gilbert Burns, and Kamaru Usman. He's not fighting a chain wrestler, he's fighting a striker. However, he is fighting a striker that's pretty accomplished at Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So if, you know, God forbid, you know, Woodley does decide to use his wrestling and does get down, get down Luque, Luque has got a shot to sub him. You know, we've seen Woodley get subbed before. You know, I obviously, if it stays standing, I like Luque, the volume and, you know, the sheer determination. But he has been hurt before. And, you know, if Woodley is not totally shot, can he land a big punch? Sure. But, you know, Luque has been a money machine for me. He's only lost to a very crafty, sugared, you know, Wonder Boy Thompson. So I like Luque here. I mean, again, would I be surprised if Woodley was able to pull something out? No, but I've just not had any encouraging signs of what Woodley can do since the Darren Till fight. And Till is far worse on the ground. Till has got essentially no ground game. And he had a really bad weight cut going into that fight as well. So I hate Darren Till, and I was all on Woodley in that fight. But give me Luque here.
Chris, who you got?
I think I'm going to check something here. I don't believe – you might be referring to the Colby Covington fight, but I don't think that was ruled a sub. I think it was KO rib injury, so I don't think
could be.
Yeah.
Yep.
And before you go into your breakdown test account, which is clearly somebody on, I don't know what that is, on YouTube. Who manhandles T Wood isn't a high level wrestler? Who has he fought recently that hasn't been one? That's who's in front of him, and who hasn't hit Luque with a big shot?
Everybody.
Yeah. Here's the thing, Tyron Woodley's got to throw a big shot. He has thrown like no strikes. Like, he knows he's fist fighting, right?
I'm not sure. He might have forgotten.
So
no, you're right. Look, Luque has taken damage from Barbarina. He's taken damage from Price, but he's always come back. You know, and Woodley has not been in a striking affair since Crocs were cool. I mean,
he's live to a knockout, sure, but I hate relying on that. I hate when guys are KO or bust. So yeah, I'll have some shares, 10 fight card, and he could land a big shot. But
yep,
I don't know. I'm 38 year old welterweights. No thanks. Sorry, Chris. Go ahead.
No problem. And I hope whatever you're testing goes well there, my friend. Thank you for the question. Question and comment. But I think that I don't think those comparisons really work just because all those fighters are way more active. They put their shots together. So it's a lot more to process. Having said that, I do think this is the livest Woodley's been in a while. Luque's going to come at him in straight lines. And if he wants to land a big shot, I think it's going to be there for him. But what we've seen a lot lately, I think, is Woodley just kind of getting scared off when, you know, these guys hit him. Like, we saw him take a big shot early in the Gilbert Burns fight and then sort of go into the shell. And we even saw Covington hit him with a big shot when he tried to come forward on him. It's impossible to know what you're going to get from Tyron Woodley these days. And it's impossible to, like, I see people betting him on Twitter and stuff, and I just think, okay, I like to play roulette, I guess, spin the wheel. I don't like playing the money wheel, which might be more akin to this, because you really don't know what you're going to get. As I said, I mean, if you could trust Woodley to wrestle, I'd like that better, but you really couldn't. I don't think you can. And I think this is going to be a bust out fight as well, I have to say. Woodley controls pace very well. And to test the count's point there, all those wins have been wrestlers, and all those big scores have been wrestle and takedown oriented. I don't think Luque is going to do that. I think Luque is going to hit him with enough shots, probably a couple big shots in there, but I think Woodley can weather it. But I do think this is Vicente Luque's fight, so he's the pick.
Main event time. Let's talk Francis Ngannou, -135. Stipe Miocic, who won this fight the first time, is still the underdog this time. I'm going to stare at Chris as he talks. There we go. Got to look at my face right now. +125 for Stipe Miocic. Interesting things here. So Francis Ngannou to win in round one, +225. It's actually down to +165. So that line's falling. I bet that at +225 because it seemed wrong. Look, I mean, we all know the breakdown for this fight. Ngannou by KO. Stipe is going to try and grapple him and keep him off him. So what's interesting is, obviously, I don't think you can stack this fight for cash. I think it's a pretty 50-50 fight. I lean towards Ngannou. I think he'll land the big shot. In terms of DraftKings, though, this to me is actually not an all-in fight. There's a very real possibility, at least to me, that Stipe gets a takedown round one, maybe even round two, but let's just say just out of round one, and Ngannou knocks him out with the first shot he lands in round two. That's 80 points. On this card, there's a lot of upside here. I don't think that's enough. I think in the event Stipe wins, I think he's 100% on the optimal. Like, whatever percentage chance you give Stipe of winning this fight, play at least that much of him on DK. Ngannou, I'm bumping it down a little bit for the reason I just mentioned, that path to victory. And while I'm picking Ngannou, he's going to be more popular. Like, he's going to be way more popular. And I kind of want to shy away from that a little bit. Like, so I'm picking Ngannou. I'm probably going to play more Stipe because I think he's more likely to end up on the optimal, and he's going to be less owned and trying to tie with less people. So that's my logic on the fight. I think eventually Ngannou will land the knockout blow. And for my betting account, if it's in the first round, it's a way to hedge off DFS, because I'm going to be a little bit underweight. I'll have plenty of live lineups with Ngannou in them, but I'll be under his 60% ownership for sure. But the first round knockout, I'll cash the bet. I'll be fine. Chris, start us off for the main event.
Yeah. So I understand, obviously, people wanting to play Ngannou because of the knockout power. I don't quite get picking him to win the fight. I just think that Stipe has so many more advantages, not just the grappling, but the thing about the first fight is Stipe is the more technical boxer. He's got better footwork. If you look at that first round, 47 of 62 significant strikes Stipe Miocic missed on. So he's swinging big and wild. And it's funny.
You mean Ngannou missed?
Yeah. Did I say Stipe?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So Ngannou missed 47 to 62. You know, it's funny. I've watched a couple of things this week that have tried to posit that, like, oh, Ngannou has improved. I don't buy it. I'm willing to say that he's not the because nobody is, the manic guy who just came out and swung the most wild combination you've ever seen in your life and somehow ended up touching the chin of Jair Rozenstruik. But he's still, I mean, when he's not going wild, like in that fight, in the Stipe fight, all of his knockouts are based on his opponent making a mistake. Like, if you look at the Junior Dos Santos fight, he throws that big overhand right and throws himself off balance. Stipe counters. Same thing with the second Curtis Blaydes fight. So I just think that there's not a lot of depth to what Francis Ngannou does, not going any bulletins there, but the thing I love about Stipe for this fight is he's really composed. he saw all those shots coming. That's not to say that a couple didn't hit them, because they did. I mean, I think the punch that Stipe really has to watch out for in this fight is the uppercut. He got hit with quite a few clean uppercuts ducking underneath the jab. But it was also the jab that really hurt Ngannou, because Stipe used it to pull back and land a couple of good shots there. So I just think Stipe has way too many advantages here. He got 141 points in the last fight and somehow is the underdog. That to me tells me I got to play him more. So I will be doing, I'll probably be underweight to Ngannou, just because in theory, the chance is there, but in practice, I mean, Stipe is going to have to fight, be on his P's and Q's all fight. No hesitation about that, but I think he can do it. He's already done it once, and I wouldn't be surprised if this time it looks a little bit cleaner, to be honest. So my pick is Stipe Miocic.
Joe, who you got?
Yeah, so I'm going to go back to the well with Ngannou in this fight. And look, I'm going to have a lot of shares of Stipe, don't kid yourself, on DraftKings. The fact that, you know, Stipe weighed in 29 pounds less than Ngannou, and also less than in his last fight, you know, I don't know what he was thinking. Ngannou always looks good. That doesn't matter. I hear he's been wrestling a lot. The things I'm hearing coming out of camp are good. Hearing that no matter who he's training to fight against, he always devotes part of every camp to training to fight Stipe. So obviously that's weighed heavily on his mind. You know, he's got the death touch, and look, he busted up Stipe. He just couldn't bring it home. I do believe that there's an arb here. If you want to bet the fight, you could certainly play Stipe by decision and Ngannou by finish. And there's a nice little arb built in there to make some money. I see those as the two most likely outcomes for this fight. So, you know, go to your book and see what that arb pays, but there's a way to potentially lock in some profit, no matter which side wins. So I would look at that, but I'm going to pick Ngannou here.
All right, guys, that's it for the UFC 260 breakdown. A little bit shorter because we only have 10 fights, but we have hot takes.
Hang on, before we go to hot takes, can we reinstitute our tradition of last week, which is picking who you think is going to get the quick win?
Sure.
I will set us off. I'm going to say Kama Worthy takes this down.
Ngannou.
Let's go. Okay, I want to be a little different here. I almost want to just say Jamie Mullarky, but that's not going to happen.
Say Jillian Robertson and get it over with.
No. That's I'm getting more and more concerned about my girl in that fight. I really am. Like, I'm really, really worried about that one. You know what? Lord Mikhail.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
An under-owned one. Hot takes in chat. Fire them up if you got any. We'll read a couple out. Anybody got one locked and loaded?
Not yet. I'm looking right now.
How hot is Mullarky by finish? I mean,
none. Not even a little. Not even a little.
Really?
I meant Mullarky? Oh,
I meant common? The other way. I meant
no,
the other
still,
way.
Still no.
Really? I might have to check on that, but I'll take your word for it.
That's definitely
okay. Not hot. So then how about Gooden finishing Abu Bakar there?
Yeah, that definitely qualifies as a hot take.
Okay. That's fine. We'll take it.
Winning DraftKings lineup will have at least $1,200 left on the table.
That's nice. I like that.
Wow. That is something. I am close to my hot take. Kill some time here.
Let's go to chat while Joe's finishing up. Tajik, Woodley in the optimal. Power bar KO. It's power bar. Help me out.
Power bar is Mark Andre Barrio.
Oh, like, Barrio. Oh, all right. That's all right. Clever.
Okay, I'm going to go.
Is that power bar filled with androgen?
It could be. That's how he got his last knockout. I'm going to go Jillian by sub plus 350. I think that's a pretty solid line.
Yeah, it is. And well, I mean, the thing is, Maverick's never been sub, but I mean, that's the way she wins. So.
Yeah, right.
Definitely.
All right, guys, make sure you go to rotowire.com/free, 10-day free trial to all their premium content, no credit card required. Like, comment, subscribe, follow all of us on Twitter. Appreciate all the support. We'll catch you for the next edition of Fight IQ for UFC 261. Good luck in those oh, God, Tajik, you judged. I'm doing the close, and you got to type that. Two fights and then a no contest.
Oh. That is we can expand on that. Eye pokes or groin strike?
No, you know what? I said something on the DFS Army podcast the other day or last night. I also have this vision in my head of Stipe going for a takedown up against the cage and Ngannou landing, going for one of the elbows.
Yeah.
And smashing the back of the head and right, Stipe ending up unconscious and they actually calling it back of the head. And we get a DQ winner or no contest or something wild like that. Test account says Robertson wins. Single leg there all day. All right. Fair enough. I hope you're right because I was all about Robertson. The more I think about that fight, the more it scares me. All right, Tajik, I'm going to try to not let anything else screw me up. I like, comment, subscribe. I did all the fun stuff. Good luck in those contests. Knees for my boys. Good luck. See you next time.
Peace.
Thanks, everybody.